Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. This episode, we address open source AI models, how to use them, and how we would like to make private and custom models available on hardwareasylum.com. I'm host Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay.
Dennis, I know we talked a lot in one of our previous episodes about the new server, and we mentioned in the main this month that server is up and running, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's totally awesome. Well, I think it's awesome, mostly because I put a lot of effort into making this server better than it would have been had you just bought it from HP.
Well, and I like to think that the performance is better, so you should notice as an end user, even getting to the podcast should be easier and faster.
Yeah. Now, downloading the podcast, that still is going to take a time because of, you know, data center and all that stuff.
But bandwidth.
I know processing the data on the website will definitely be a lot faster. Having more memory available is allowing me to do more things with that server.
Well, one of the things that I'm most interested in, and we talked about this in the 5080 discussion in the main this week as well, so make sure you check that discussion out if you haven't already, is how the video card selection process and particularly the amount of memory benefits artificial intelligence and how you're using that to do some artificial intelligence projects for the site.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, let's just assume that nobody listened to the previous episode.
All right, fair.
Shame on you. But with the new server build, it's basically a DL360. It's a 1U HP Gen 10 server. So it's got a couple of big Intel processors in it. It also has the ability for me to install two single slot graphics cards. And so I elected to pick up two A4000s off of eBay. They had come with 16 gigabytes of memory each, together giving me 32 gigabytes across two GPUs.
Okay.
And that is going to allow me to run various AI models. So I have a VM running through Hyper-V, just because it's a Windows server. You know, shoot me if you want, but right. That's basically what I'm running.
Well, it's easy.
And it's easy, and it's actually very robust and very stable, and that's also the most important. On that server, I'm running Ollama, which is a very popular...
You just think about Winamp every time I hear llama in computers.
Yeah, I know. Ollama. It's a very popular inferencing application that allows you to do a lot with AI models. So it has model management. You can chat with it. You can set up RAGs in the background so you can query a trusted source of information before you let the LLM go and generate something for you.
Okay, so slow down a little bit because you used two terms that I'm not super familiar with.
All right.
LLM, I know from my research, is a language learning model.
But it's actually a large language model.
Oh, there you go. See, I didn't even know. Yep. But I'm not familiar with the term RAG.
Yeah, that's RAG is retrieval augmented generation.
Okay.
I'm sure that it has a direct correlation to what it does, but basically it is the process of adding new information, new context to your LLM for it to generate a response. And that's supposed to reduce the amount of what they call hallucinations.
Oh, okay. AI hallucinations sounds a little dangerous.
Yeah, well...
Skynet.
Yeah. If you go to ChatGPT and you ask it a question about, hedge trimmers or something like that, okay. Right? It's going to have a certain amount of knowledge about what a hedge trimmer is. But if you ask it specifics about, like, what model hedge trimmer you should get, it may not know exactly if this model of whatever it tells you is actually a hedge trimmer.
That sounds dangerous.
And that is a hallucination. And that's one reason that using AI is dangerous if you don't actually know something about the subject matter that you are having it generate for you. So, you know, you could have it generate your college papers, right?
Sure.
Write me a paper on this, blah, 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 blah. And then you just copy it verbatim and then you get an F. Well, that might be because a lot of the information in there is incorrect. And unless you know something about the subject matter, you're not going to be able to pick that up right away.
Hallucinations. I get it.
Now, if you add a RAG or this retrieval augmented generation to the context of that question, then the inference application is going to query that RAG collection first and then basically get all of the information it needs based off of the question, and then forward that information to the LLM as context, and then it's going to generate a response for you. And that will reduce the hallucinations down to what they say is generally like 70%. So it will be a lot more accurate in giving you information related to what it is that you're asking, which is great.
So if I'm understanding correctly, essentially you have to feed the AI, and the more data that you provide, well, or access to data, right, the more accurate that your AI is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the same way as, you know, if you chat with ChatGPT, we're going to use that as an example. If you give it some information, like I've used it for generating resumes. So you go to ChatGPT and you treat it like conversing with somebody, right?
Yeah.
So that person doesn't know anything about what it is that you want to do. So I say, okay, I am looking for a job and I need to have some help tailoring my resume for a certain job. They would say, okay, well, what's the description? So you give that the description, and then you might provide your resume. And then it will, at that point, you've provided a lot of real context for your conversation so that it knows the walls around the garden. It's not going to invent a lot of things because it doesn't need to. It has all the information that it needs. Now, if you went in and then just basically say, hey, write me a resume, it's going to know maybe what the format of a resume is, but all of the information in there is going to be completely made up or hallucinated because it doesn't have any context for why it's generating what it's generating.
Okay, I think I get it.
Yeah.
So you've got essentially a resume builder, which is something that we all need on occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what else have you been working on? I know you've talked about a couple of different types of models, I guess is the right term.
Right. So on the this AI Ollama server that I've generated, I have a front end running called Open Web UI.
Okay.
And it's, in a sense, it's kind of a clone of what ChatGPT does. Inside there, I have two ways to interact. So it can hook directly into Ollama. So all of the models that I have loaded into Ollama are available to me. And right now I am running a Gemma 3. We have Llama 3.2. That's the 3 billion parameter version. We have Qwen 2.5 Coder, which, being a programmer, I was like, I want to try this out and see, you know, how accurate is the coding that it can give me. And then I also have Qwen 2.5, which is an instruct model. It's very similar to Llama. I found it to be very logical in the way that it formulates responses, which is pretty great. And then I also have Llama 3.1, 8 billion instruct, which is the one of the source models for Llama 3.2. You kind of get into, if you dive into the weeds about how these models are made and how they're distilled, they all start somewhere.
Right.
Because there's never really a pure genesis, right? You have one model, and then they say, like, okay, we're going to use this, and then we're going to build this one. And then we're going to use this, and then we're going to build this one. So it's kind of a perpetual improving along the way, but there's always a source from somewhere else.
So let me stop right here. You mentioned quite a bit of different tools, but if I wanted to work on this at home, are these tools readily available? Are they free? I mean, how do you find this stuff?
Well, all of these models are open source. So I've downloaded these ones from a website called Hugging Face.
That's
funny. It's
like
the craziest name ever. But Hugging Face is it's a huge GitHub, in a sense, where developers can go and they create an account. And with that account, they get a certain amount of space so they can upload like data sets, or if they've fine-tuned a model, they can upload the model. The developers of these models, so like Gemma 3 is from Google. The Llama models are from Facebook or Meta. And then the Qwen models are actually from Alibaba Cloud or something. They're out of Singapore.
Interesting.
So these models are being posted here. Now, the funny thing is, it's like Gemma 3 is based off of Gemini 2. And if you don't know, Gemini 2 is the model that Google uses whenever you chat with the AI on Google.
Oh, interesting.
So it works in the same way that ChatGPT has their huge model that you can go and chat with on chatgpt.com. But you can also download a GPT-4 and GPT-3, which are the open source versions of that particular model. Now, those have all been what they call distilled. So instead of having like a billion parameters or whatever, they have 14 billion parameters or 8 billion parameters. And those parameters are important because that's, quote unquote, the smarts of the model. So you're removing some of the extraneous data or some of the context that is available that you can query. Now, one other important thing is like we have the Llama 3.1, 8 billion, right? I mentioned that one earlier.
All right.
It has 8 billion parameters of context, but it also has support for like 12 different languages. So some of those parameters are actually different languages.
So it needs to support Spanish, English, whatever. So the eight billion's kind of misleading, I guess.
Yeah. That's the part that's a little weird sometimes. But anyhow, the point is I have these models loaded within Ollama on the private NinjaLane server. So through Open Web UI, you can select one of these models. It will load it up into those graphics cards. And then you can start asking it questions.
So let's talk about some of the models that you have been working on. Because I know you've mentioned a couple of different examples so far, but they're not the only ones.
Right.
So you mentioned you've been generating code more just out of curiosity because you're not doing active coding right now.
Right.
And you've also mentioned resume assistance, which is very interesting to me.
Yep.
But what else have you been up to?
Well, there is other quote unquote models that you can add to Open Web UI. Now, these are separate from Ollama, and they're also separate from what you would traditionally think as a model. So through Open Web UI, you can download what they call models, and it's basically, I have three of them loaded here. One's called Code Writer. We have another one called Resume Editor, and then we have a final one called D&D Dungeon Master Assistant.
Oh, now that is intriguing.
Now, so if we go and look at these things, they are basically a system prompt. So these are models that were created or modified by using a system prompt. And that's one of the ways that you can modify how an LLM responds to you.
Okay.
So within the code writer, if we go and look at this, it gives you what the prompt is and it goes, I want you to act as a senior full stack tech leader and top tier brilliant software developer. Brilliant. You embody technical excellence and a deep understanding of wide range technologies, your expertise, blah, 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 blah. And then it goes through and says, okay, here's the languages that you are an expert in. Here's some of the cutting edge technologies that I want you to also understand. And all of these things combined give the LLM basically another walled garden to work within.
Interesting.
So this system prompt is sent with every query. So when you ask it a question, it's like, I want you to write me a Python script that will create a rocket or something, right? And what it will do is it sends in the system prompt, so it has all that context of what it is that it's supposed to do. And then you ask it the question, and then that response is within that garden. And that way it reduces the amount of hallucinations because it knows what it is that it's supposed to do.
All right. So I've got a question.
All right.
So we've gotten some help at least getting some pretty in-depth system prompts.
Mm-hmm.
But how does it stay current? I mean, this is kind of a walled garden, as you mentioned. How does it know what's going on in the real world?
That is a very good question. And the answer to that is it doesn't.
Oh.
But there's a way that you can influence that. And that is one of the options in these quote-unquote models where you can add a knowledge base. Now, a knowledge base within Open Web UI is basically that RAG that I was telling you about earlier. So if you wanted, say, for instance, our code writer model to understand a current language. So if you say you have a book on Python 4, which isn't out yet, right? But this LLM is only familiar with Python 2 and Python 3. But you want it to know what Python 4 is. Now, if you have a PDF of that Python 4 with some code samples and how things are supposed to be phrased and stuff like that, you add it as a RAG or a knowledge base to Open Web UI, you assign it to this model, and then every time you ask it a question, it will send the system prompt so it knows what the garden is. Then it will query that RAG for all of the relevant information based off of what your question is. And then when it formats that response, it will use the RAG information first and then formulate the response based off of what it already knows in the model.
So that sounds like that requires a lot of resources, though, a lot.
It does. It does add more memory resources, which is one reason why I elected to have 32 gigabytes of memory instead of, you know, buying a more expensive card that might have more memory per card, but I would only be able to buy one card.
So if I'm understanding correctly and using your example, right? When you send the query, it assumes that prompt, which is sometimes lengthy.
Yep.
Then it checks your knowledge base, which could be lots of resources. In this case, the Python 4 book.
Yep.
And then it, I guess, has to grok what the answer is from all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that slow?
It seems slow just because it's doing a lot of things. And in a way, it kind of is. But the slowness is not necessarily processing of the data because those graphic cards are really, really fast. The slowness is, one, loading the model into memory because Ollama kind of unloads the model so you can swap them around. And then also the size of the model. So if you have, for instance, a 3 billion parameter model, it doesn't have a lot of information to sort through before it can generate a response. So that response can be really super fast. Now, if you have a 14 billion or 32 billion parameter model, it requires more memory to run, but it also has a lot more data to sort through. And when it's generated in the response, it does it at the token level, which is another term. Token, think of a token as a word. When it's generating a response, it says, here's one word. And then it's going to go and search the model to find what the next logical word would be. And then it adds that word to it. And then it goes and adds, looks for the next logical word. And then it adds that.
Oh, so kind of like predictive text.
Yeah, it's exactly like predictive text, which is also why you get hallucinations in certain cases, because the way that it's programmed, it's like, well, this is the logical way to create this sentence. And it's just going to be adding things to it. Well, once you add the RAG and the prompt and the predictiveness to it, then it knows, well, let's just say it doesn't necessarily know, it has a better idea of what the next word will be. Now, the size of the model will dictate how fast those words come through. You know, we can do an example here where we can ask a question of the 3 billion parameter Llama 3.2, and it's actually really super fast. It's something like 50 something tokens per second. But then if you go to Gemma 3, which is at 12 billion, the speed drops down to 25 or 29.
Well, that's still pretty reasonable when you consider what it's going through.
Yeah, well, and it's also completely private.
But you're providing specific data, right? You're not just saying, you know, go out and Google this and figure it out.
Right. Although I do have that option.
Oh, no.
Which is kind of fun because there is there's two ways that you can search the web with this. There's one, there's a tool where it will look for a URL in the question or in the prompt. And you say, hey, summarize this page in two paragraphs. And then you give it a URL. It will go out, find that page, use that page as a quote unquote RAG, generate two paragraphs, because that's what I said, and then respond back with that information. And then there's also an option where you can do just a web search. And what it does is it will search for your question in a search engine and then give you responses based off of that. And some of those are a little questionable sometimes.
Well, I mean, it's not any different than Googling, right? You still need to assume some knowledge or you're going to get hosed.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing with AI is that you still have to be smart enough to know if what you're getting back is really what you want. Sometimes it's just a quick little search is like, oh, well, yeah, it's giving me the right numbers. It's giving me the right date. It's giving me the right place. This is probably okay. But if it doesn't do that, or it says this product is XYZ instead of ZYX, then you know that it's just kind of making it up.
Okay. So code writing seems relatively straightforward, assuming you can read enough code to know if it's accurate.
Uh-huh.
But I'm more intrigued with the creative aspect of it through like the Dungeons and Dragons model.
Well,
let's talk about that.
Yeah, I know. Let's go back to that one real quick. So we go to Dungeons and Dragons Master Assistant. This is one that I downloaded from Open Web UI. And again, it starts with a system prompt. And the first part of it is, you are Dungeon GPT, a highly powerful and creative Dungeon Master Assistant. You are an expert dungeon master, world builder, game designer, and fantasy writer.
Wow.
You have the complete and full understanding of the Dungeons & Dragons 5e rules, which is questionable because we don't know if the model has the idea of what 5e is.
Right. And those books are still pretty trademarked. So
right.
All right, you'd have to have your own library of those in some sort of document form.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It goes, and you understand how to write great fantasy story and build fantastic creative fantasy world. Blah, 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 blah. There's a lot more going on here. It gives you some prompt suggestions of ways to start, right? So one of them is design and write a D&D adventure for a third level party.
Okay. That's helpful.
Another one would be help me design a pantheon for my world. Here's some lore of my world. And then it's an interactive question and answer with your LLM. Design an NPC, design a tavern, including the name, location, employees of the NPC, the rumors, and the special twist.
Nice.
Now, we went, and we did this before we started, so Darren is like surprised, and he already knows what's going on. But what we did is uploaded the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition Player Handbook.
So I'm a nerd and I have a bunch of these old books.
Yeah.
And some of them in PDF format.
In this case, it was just one PDF. We just added one to it. And then we started by selecting the Dungeon Master Assistant. And we're just going to high level it here. But basically, I ask the question, hey there, what do I need to get started? And then it responds, hello, to get started with the AD&D game, because it queried that knowledge base, right. And now it knows that we're in Advanced Dungeons.
So now we've framed it as, AD&D 2nd Edition instead of 5th Edition.
Yep. And it goes, here's a breakdown of what's recommended. If you are new to AD&D entirely, the best way to learn is to join a group of experienced players who can guide you to play. And then it quoted where it got that information from.
Yeah, that's cool, because it's almost like a bibliography, a little quote to with the PDF.
Mm-hmm. And it said some more stuff. It's like, as a player, you only need the player handbook. Dungeons Master's Guide is essential for Dungeon Master, but not necessarily for players. And we're just going to focus on players. I wanted to create a character. Can you help me with that? And it went through and says, do you want to start by discussing which character class you're interested in creating? I go.
Yeah, that's a good start.
I said, hey, what character classes are there? And in AD&D, there was not very many of them. So we have the warrior, wizard, priest, and rogue.
Things were so much simpler back then.
I know, right? And I go, let's go warrior. And he goes, excellent choice. Warrior group encompasses characters who primarily make their way in the world through skill and arms. Within the warrior group, you have three distinct classes, fighter, paladin, and ranger. And it gives me a brief overview of what they are. And this is all coming out of the player handbook.
Nice.
So I don't actually have to read the player handbook. It's doing it for me, which it's kind of not part of the fun or whatever.
I don't know, though, because it saves you a lot of page turning. I could see how this would be particularly useful for the DMG, right? The Dungeon Master's Guide, when you're trying to find a rule.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I said I wanted to be a ranger. He goes, fantastic. Rangers are skilled woodsmen and warriors, often at home in the wilderness. It actually started to create a character for me. So it goes, my ability requirements, strength 13, dexterity 13, constitution 14, wisdom 14. And it gave me the races that were allowed. And it also told me what the alignment had to be for me to be a ranger.
Yeah. And the prerequisites, which is nice. But then it offers to even ask you, it's asking you what race.
Mm-hmm. And I chose a half elf. And at that point, it tells me what kind of die I need to throw to set my stats.
Right. So it gives you two options, the point version and the roll version. So we went with the roll version,
mm-hmm.
which is roll 46, drop the lowest. So it asked us if we wanted to roll it. When we said, no. Go AI, we're lazy.
Yeah. Can you roll for my stats? And it goes, all right, let's roll the dice for you. And it actually did four random numbers. Strength, 5, 3, 6, and 1 for a total of 15. Dexterity, 4, 6, 3, 2, total of 15. Constitution, 6, 4, 3, 1, total of 14. Wisdom, 5, 4, 4, 2, total of 15. And so now it gave me what my stats were for my half elf, which was great. And I go, I wanted to ask a question.
Sure. At this point. So we'll see how smart it is.
Yeah. So let's go. Let's create the character. What would you, RSSA, what would be my THACO?
So if you're not familiar with THACO, that is a second edition rule, very polarizing back in the day, which stands for to hit armor class, zero is the O.
Yeah.
So THAC zero technically, but we all called it THACO or THACO depending on where you lived in the world.
Yep. Now the first sentence back, okay, let's calculate your THACO to hit armor class. So that's the THCO or THA, I don't know. It
you
is what
it
is.
You got it.
Yeah. And then it actually quotes where in the handbook it finds it. It goes, according to table 53 in the player's handbook, the THACO for first level ranger is 20. But then since I'm a half elf, I get a modifier of +1. But since I'm still level one, it's still at 20, which is great.
I like that it tells you not only what your modifiers are, but why, which is pretty slick.
Yeah. And really, this is the power of adding a rag to a model. So I'm using Gemma 3 to generate all of this text, which is one of my favorite models now is Gemma 3, which is pretty awesome. It's querying this book that was made back in the 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And
maybe older than that. I don't want to look. Let's not look.
Yeah, we're not going to look. But anyhow, it's basically a knowledge base, and it's pulling out all of this relevant information for us. And then I go, what's my armor class? And it basically tells me that for level one, my armor class is going to be 10. But it also tells me that rangers typically wear lighter armor as they need to maintain mobility. Let's assume you're starting with studded leather armor. According to table 46, studded leather armor provides an armor class of 7.
Pretty helpful.
Yeah. Then my dexterity modifier is +1. So then it would say my armor class is 8 if I had that.
Nice.
And then I go, hey, can you generate a character sheet? And lo and behold, it spits out all the information and then fills in some areas where it's like, well, we don't know what our intelligence is.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. So it realizes that it hasn't done intelligence and charisma yet, among a couple of other things.
Yep.
So it prompts for those. But you've got everything, skills, equipment, combat stats, ability scores. I mean, it's all in text. It's not generating a table or an actual character sheet, although that might be something we can teach it.
Well, yeah, probably.
but go ahead and keep going. This is cool.
Yeah. So then we scroll down. It tells me what kind of equipment and skills I have. And I go, this is great. Can you finish building the character sheet so we can start a campaign? He goes, all right, let's finalize your character sheet and get ready for adventure. We'll handle those missing details and add a few elements to make your ranger feel complete. So then it rolled for intelligence and charisma. It actually gives me my 4 stats, which is great. It tells me what my hit points are based off of the rolls, and then gives me the updated character sheet.
So now everything's filled in. Nice.
But then it notices that I never told it what my name is.
Or even really what your character's like.
Yeah, or like what my alignment will be. So those are the stats that it needed to ask me for. So I provided, say, I'm going to be lawful good. My name is Battery.
Funny.
And then it goes, excellent, Battery, lawful good. Half-elf ranger is ready for action. A name both memorable and hitting at a spark of righteous energy.
I love that. A little humor.
Then, this is where it gets a little interesting because I'm not familiar with the player's handbook as well as I probably should be.
No, it's been a while.
But it goes, the campaign, The Shadow of Oakhaven. This campaign takes place in the Vendrit rolling hills of Silverwood Vale, a region known for its peaceful farming, blah, 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 blah. But it quoted that as coming out of the player handbook.
Yeah, so we'll have to pull that out and see if there's an example adventure in there that it's using.
Yeah. And it gives me what my mission is. And now it asks me the question, what does Battery do?
I love it.
At this point, it's coming into the quest and I can actually start filling it out. Ideally, if we had a quest book, we could upload the quest book as a rag and use all of this stuff that we just generated and then have it use that quest book to put us on our quest.
So to me, this is really interesting because as a potential dungeon master, you could use this to help flesh out and build your campaign and to help you run it, particularly if you had a text copy of a player's handbook that it could reference. But I also really like the appeal of you could actually get this AI model to run a solo campaign, sort of like a choose your own adventure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's kind of what D&D is, right?
Well, I guess that's true, yeah.
I mean, it just happens to be four people playing together and you have one person driving the story and then also, you know, telling you that, oh, you have to roll a 20 to go and pick this lock or whatever, right? But that's part of what makes it interesting.
Well, I like this and I like the fact that we're fleshing it out. And I know that you've talked about maybe making this available on the website. What do you think about that?
I've been thinking about building a Patreon, but I feel bad about saying, hey, yeah, give me a dollar just to show your support. That just kind of seems silly.
Sure.
But I would like to be able to provide something to the people that actually enjoy the content. And maybe we can have some of these prompt-based models available for Patreon subscribers.
I like that. I could even see where maybe I would pay even a little bit more to be able to build my own model and prompt and have that available at any time. So that's really cool. But right now I like the idea of being able to play with the AI as well and learn a little bit about it. I know most folks are in the same boat as I am. Mm-hmm. AI is something we've heard about, maybe peripheral experience, whether we like it or not, but it's a great opportunity to engage with it in a safe environment.
Yeah, and that the safe environment is also important, but not necessarily as dangerous as it used to be. So like when you use ChatGPT, the free version of it, all the content that you give it, you're basically giving to the ChatGPT or OpenAI. So they can use all that content for training future models or whatever they want, really, because it's on their system. If you have a private AI, one that you're hosting locally, or maybe one that you happen to use on hardwareasylum.com, I'm not going to be keeping any of that stuff because that costs money and I have no reason for it.
Right. Well, can you guys tell us what you think? Have you used AI? Do you have some hot tips for us? Or do you maybe have some interest in using our AI at some point in the future? Let us know and we'll get back to you with updates.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.